And from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Nearly all the seats in the Alaska legislature are up for re-election this year, so the makeup of State House and Senate could look a lot different next session. And there's been a lot more attention on races further up the ballot, like for U.S. Senate and House and for governor. But Alaska Beacon's James Brooks tells Casey Grove with Alaska Public Media that the makeup and the lawmaking in the State House has arguably a bigger impact on Alaskans' day-to-day lives.
Since 2020, the House has been controlled by a coalition that includes 16 Democrats, 2 Republicans, and 3 independents. What's important this year is that a lot of those Democrats aren't returning to the legislature. And so the result is a lot of turnover. We're going to see a lot of new faces in the legislature, and especially in the House, regardless of the elections.
So what are the most interesting races that you're following for House seats this year?
There's 5 races that I'm keeping my eye on. Most of them are in Anchorage, where the city is pretty closely divided between Republican-leaning and Democratic-leaning voters. In North Anchorage, so Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and Government Hill, I'm keeping an eye on the race that includes Democrats Lynn Franks and Cliff Groh versus Republican incumbent David Nelson. That district always has really low turnout, and redistricting made it a bit more Democratic. So Groh or Franks, depending on the results of ranked choice voting, have a shot at beating Nelson. In East Anchorage, the race between Donna Mears as the Democratic candidate and Forrest Wolf, the Republican candidate, is shaping up to be fairly close. In Midtown Anchorage, Democrat Andy Josephson and Republican Kathy Hensley. Another Anchorage race, Ted Eichscheid as the Democrat versus Stanley Wright as the Republican. All of those seem to be coming down to the wire in terms of who wins. And then in Fairbanks, the only one that's outside of Anchorage that seems to be a toss-up at this point is Republican incumbent Bart Laban, who's going up against Democrat Maxine Dybert and a farther right Republican, Kelly Nash.
So why are those 5 the ones to watch?
In all 5 of those, you have candidates who finished fairly close together in the primary. And while we know there should be a lot more voters next week than there were in August, the demographics of those districts are close enough together that anyone can win. In a lot of districts across the state, there's a preponderance of Republican-leaning voters or Democratic-leaning voters. In these 5 districts, the margins are tight enough that either candidate or any candidate could win it. And I think those 5 races are going to go a long way to determine whether the coalition survives in the House or whether we go to a Republican-led majority. It's possible that that majority will pick up an independent or two. Josiah Patkatak from the North Slope may join a Republican-led majority if Republicans keep that majority, but remains to be seen.
Right. There's like different ways that this puzzle could fit together. But remind us what this House majority has been like in the past. It seems like it has not been sort of the, you know, rubber stamp, you know, state house that would have maybe agreed with the Republican governor, right?
Right. And you called this a puzzle, and I think that's a good way to think about it. Although before Election Day, we don't even know what pieces we have because we don't know who's going to win. So when you talk about, well, what form could the House take, we need to first figure out what pieces we have before we can figure out how they fit together in terms of creating a majority or minority. Because over in the Senate, we've seen Republicans hold a majority, but Republicans there have been so divided that it's effectively been run as a coalition. They can't pass a budget without Democratic votes. But to answer your question about what sorts of policies, what sorts of differences we could see, over the past 4 years that Governor Dunleavy has been governor, we've seen the coalition-controlled House being the biggest break on the agenda he wants to pursue. We've seen them oppose his budget cuts, oppose his permanent fund dividend plan, oppose a lot of the social issues that he's pursued. And so if control switches from the coalition to the Republicans, you're going to see more than likely a lot more of Dunleavy's proposals, assuming he's reelected, become law or are allowed to advance.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks speaking with Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove. Many Alaskans in favor of holding a constitutional convention are hoping to change the way the state appoints judges. Alaska is one of 26 states that select judges in a way that's intended to keep politics out of the process. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports on how we ended up with the current system and why some people want something different.
When the framers of Alaska's constitution were debating how the state should pick its judges, the goal was to remove politics from the process as much as possible.
There had been some problems in the territorial days because they were basically political appointees by the president of the United States.
That's Matt Peterson, an Anchorage attorney who's currently teaching a seminar on the Alaska Constitution.
There was a wide variety of competence amongst the political appointees. And the idea was to have a system of what we would call merit selection, where people were decided on the basis of competence, integrity, fairness, that type of thing, and not on political considerations.
But Jim Minery says the system we ended up with missed the mark. He's executive director of Alaska Family Council, a conservative Christian advocacy group.
All it does really is just move the politics behind closed doors.
Minery is backing efforts to pass Ballot Measure 1, which would set another constitutional convention in motion. A chance to rewrite the judicial selection process is one of the main reasons he's pushing for a convention. Under the current system, an independent commission called the Alaska Judicial Council vets applicants and selects a pool of potential judges that are presented to the governor, who picks one to fill a judicial vacancy. The council is made up of three attorneys and three members of the public. The Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court serves as chair of the council and can provide a tie-breaking vote. Minery and other opponents of the current process claim that the attorney members of the council skew liberal and have propagated a judiciary that leans to the left.
This is not about the council just saying, okay, these are the qualified people, we'll give you the governor. No, they do a very strong vetting process. And if they do not match the liberal members of the attorney side of the judicial council, the governor's not going to see those people.
Minery says he'd prefer to see a process that skips the council and allows the governor to appoint their pick, similar to the process for appointing U.S. Supreme Court judges. According to minutes from the original convention, delegates did consider this appointment method. They also considered the possibility of electing judges. Both were ruled out on the basis that they would subject judicial candidates to partisan politics. Even proponents of the Judicial Council say the current process isn't perfect.
No, I think people would be naive to say there's no politics in it.
Elaine Andrews is a retired Alaska Superior and District Court judge.
The governor can choose an applicant that the governor feels most comfortable with politically, but the citizens of Alaska can be assured that the governor's choice is someone who is qualified for the position, and not only qualified, but among the most qualified of the applicants.
Andrews rejects the notion that the council skews liberal in its decision-making. The majority of Alaska Bar Association members are nonpartisan or undeclared, according to a study that Alaska Family Council paid for in 2020. Republican former state senator John Coghill, whose father was an original delegate to the convention in 1955, says the Judicial Council is a noble idea for selecting judges, but he agrees with Minery and other conservatives who want to see their ideas better represented in the process.
On judicial selection, generally speaking, they have my heart on the matter, but do I think that they can change that in the political dynamic that we're in Alaska? I just don't think so.
He says adding more non-attorney layman seats to the council could be one way to address that concern, but he says it's not worth an entire constitutional convention. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
You're listening to KTOO.